Hi.
How you doing?
How are you? As by way of introduction, my name is Oliver.
Oliver.
Traeger.
Oliver Traeger.
And I've been working on this book.
I seem to have heard that name before.
People have told me that, but I guess I'm a phenomenon waiting to be discovered.
Have you written any other books, man?
I've edited a lot of books where I work, a reference type of books, things you probably never would have seen about world and national issues, but I've had some articles here and there about, you know, about Lord Buckley, about things like baseball and the Grateful Dead and, you know, pretty low-level stuff. This is the first major undertaking.
You probably know more about Lord Buckley than I do, man. I was a big fan of his, and I used to have about three of his albums, and they're missing. When I heard you were calling about Lord Buckley, and I went to look for the goddamn albums, and they missing. And I don't know who the hell took them, you know? Damn it. Anyway, I know that his daughter's been in touch with me.
Uh-huh.
Have you gotten in touch with his daughter yet?
Yeah, she's supposedly been working on a book for many years, although I should say that I'm working totally independently of the family. I just found that to deal with one of them meant to alienate the others, and to me, Buckley was about bringing people together, and I hope that doesn't dissuade you from chatting further.
I don't understand. What do you mean? You're going to write a nasty book about him?
No, not at all. It's hard. You can't be attracted to Buckley and write something nasty. This is totally for love.
Why don't you tell me what you know about him, and then I'll try to fill you in on what I know about him.
Okay, well, I actually wrote a nice section in the book about 50s radio, and even talked about you and people like Lavada Durst a little bit as being perhaps influenced by Buckley's style to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But essentially, he was born in California around in 1905.
Yeah.
And
what year did he die? Was it 1963?
1960 in New York, under rather mysterious and controversial circumstances involving his cabaret card.
Did somebody kill him?
Well, some people say he was offed. I tend to think he was just a man who was under a great deal of stress and had a heart attack and died.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who say he was poisoned or was involved with a jewel heist, and I've never really been able to get to the bottom of it. And maybe it's one of those things that's not to be meant to get to the bottom of.
Well, like I say, you know more than I do, man. I'm very interested. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions, maybe.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, I'll give you the brief thumbnail history.
Yeah.
I mean, he fell into show business rather accidentally in the 20s and 30s. He worked in the dance marathons. He worked in Capone's bars. He associated with jazz musicians and began to develop the lingo and the patois. And by the late 40s, after tours with the big bands, started doing pieces like the Nazz and the Gettysburg Address.
Well, I always thought he was the man who created the slang. You know, the very hip the hip language we even still use today, you know.
He was like the one of the originators. I mean,
yeah. I thought he was the man who, you know, who originated most of the words, like, you know, like dig and everything's cool, baby, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was the man who came up with the original statement that we all use today, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, I see him as the forerunner and the groundbreaker, but someone who's been really neglected and overlooked. And, you know,
and what I was wondering, you know, mostly all the great Afro-Americans of the United States were the ones who really came up with the, you know, with the hip language that most of us use. And did they get it from Lord Buckley?
Well, I think it was a joint venture, you might say.
Well, tell me about it.
But he made his professional mark in the 20s, you know, in Chicago, which was the hotbed of
Did he start out as a jazz a beatnik type individual?
He kind of started out as like almost a Don Rickles type of
Oh, no, he was a comedian first.
Yeah, he was a comedian.
Was he English? Did he have an English accent? Or was
no,
he Southern or what?
He was from California.
He was?
Yeah, from the Sierras.
How did he get the name Lord Buckley, man?
He gave that name to himself, kind of in the tradition of the jazzers, like Duke Ellington, Count Basie.
I see.
And you could extrapolate from there, Elvis the King,
right.
Prince, whatever. I mean, it's a tradition. Even, I suppose, I mean,
how many albums he put out altogether?
Well, he put out, altogether, like, posthumously and compilations, it's about 15 or 16.
I didn't know he put out that many. I have the Nazz, you know.
I mean,
he inspired me to do a religious hip album, too. I mean, when I was a kid living in Brooklyn, man, I first got touted to Lord Buckley when I was digging John R. from WLAC down in Nashville, you know? Are you familiar with that?
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was playing that good down-home rhythm and blues, and here it was 1956 or something, you know?
Right.
And here was old John R. in the middle of Nashville, Tennessee, with the Ku Klux Klan, you know, hanging around the window with chains, you know? And he's playing all this good black music, which, of course, for us white folks, was a terrible no-no, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was always a big fan of rhythm and blues. And then I remember one day I was, how old was I? About 17, I guess. I walked in a record store where you could listen to records, and they had a couple albums from Lord Buckley. Well, I immediately became very fascinated. But I was only able to find about three albums. And I've collected a couple of interviews from people who, you know, had the, you know, him doing an interview with somebody on tape from a radio station or something.
Yeah, I have a couple, too. I wonder which ones you have.
I have the one where he says, hey, baby, you don't get this many lines in your face from living one lifetime. You know, that type of thing.
Right.
You have that one?
Well, I know that from an interview. I have that from a record.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that's on the record. There's a record called Bad Rapping of the Marquis de Sade.
Oh, man, I tell you, I gotta have that material, man.
You never heard that before?
No, I gotta have that stuff.
Oh, man, that's like, to me, his greatest. Yeah, it's...
what can I send you money or something or what?
Well, I'll be happy to make you tapes. I mean, I do this kind of thing for people a lot, but in exchange, I mean, if you just allow me to use your comments in my book.
Oh, I'd be delighted.
You know, that's.
I would be delighted. I got a bunch of tapes on a whole bunch of R&B cats too, like John R. You know, the old dudes.
Talking about
the old disc jockeys, you know, Hoss Allen, Big Hugh Baby, and all those cats. Magnificent Montague, you know. You ever hear Magnificent Montague?
Never heard that before. I heard of him before.
Well, he was the dude who said "Burn, baby, burn" when they had the Watts riots.
Uh huh. He was the first. He was the one who tagged that.
Huh?
He was the one who tagged.
Yeah, right. He was on that black station in where is it? Compton. Anyway, right. Let's get back to Lord Buckley. You will send me those tapes, right?
I'll be happy to. Give me the address there.
Okay.
Okay.
Hold on, the address. Wait a minute. When we finish the conversation, I'll put you back to Pauline.
Okay.
And she'll give you the address.
Okay, cool. Now, let me ask you a question. These
mind if I put you on a speakerphone? I'm just up here in the room by myself.
That's cool.
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
All right, Oliver.
Okay, you can hear?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious about the interviews that you have. I have one with Studs Terkel from 1960.
Oh, my God, man, I don't have that.
And I got one from... California 59 with a guy named Bill Butler.
Oh, man, I tell you, my God, Jesus Christ, I'm about to have a heart on you. Hey, you got to send me that stuff, man. I'll do whatever you want. I will do whatever you want.
Well, let me ask you, you say you have interviews with him, too?
No, I have, I thought were interviews, but now you're telling me they're album cuts.
I think so, yeah.
No, some fan would walk up and, you know, knowing that I was a fan of Lord Buckley, and, you know, give me some piece of trivia or something, you know? And I thought they were real interviews. Anyway, I've lost most of the stuff I ever collected on Lord Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could replenish my library...
Well,
I tell you, it's a funny thing here, Oliver. I have just been contacted by at least two other people who are doing some kind of thing on Lord Buckley.
Well, I heard that you talked to a guy named Humphreys at the Smithsonian.
Yeah, right.
That,
exactly.
That's how I heard about you.
Yeah.
Because he talked to a friend of mine. And
What's
friend.
What's going on anyway?
It's we're reaching critical mass.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, when good ideas are happening from a lot of people, and it's time for the word about a genius to get out, the idea gets around to a lot of people all at once.
Jesus, it's amazing, man. I tell you.
Well, who's the other person that you talked to?
Some guy in L.A. Well, you know, I just did Married with Children at the sitcom.
Right.
And while I was on the set, evidently we were contacted. I forget what the magazine it was, but somebody was doing an article on Lord Buckley.
Huh.
I can't give you.
Well, that might have been me calling a couple of, like, last week.
Huh?
I called your office about a week ago. So
but
that
didn't call us in L.A.
No, but maybe your office called there to tell them about
call us from L.A.
Huh, I don't know. I don't know what to say. That's anything involving Buckley is good news, because to me he's an overlooked genius. You know, I mean, it's kind of like if none of us had heard of Einstein before.
Oh man, he had a way about him. You know, I really believe in head vibrations, and it's not only what you say or the style how you say it or your timing, it's what's coming out of your emotional situation at the time.
Right.
Every time I've heard Buckley, man, he has totally blown me away. I tell you.
Well, he's like
a wonderful experience to listen to him.
Well, it's, you know, I think the sign of his greatness is that every time you listen to him, you hear something new.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. I love you, Oliver.
Did you ever see
him? We're gonna be good friends, you and me. All right.
I hope so. Yeah. I've been a fan of yours since I was about, I don't know, 10 years old or something.
Oh, you're terrific. How old are you now, man?
Just turned 38.
Oh my God, you're in prime time, man. I'll do anything I can to help you out with this thing. We'll make this a hit, baby.
Let's talk some more. I mean, did you ever see? You never saw Buckley perform, though.
Never saw him in person. I remember at one time in my life, when I was running XCRB in California, that Mexican station,
mm-hmm.
It was a bunch of, he had like a cult following. It was almost like a church.
Right.
And I guess there maybe was 30 people involved in the church. And they came to the station one night and with a whole bunch of stuff, presents from Lord Buckley and all that shit, because I happened to, I guess for a week there I was talking about Lord Buckley and I played a few record cuts and things like that. And all of a sudden, these people got crazy, you know, and came over and started, you know, really giving me the stuff.
Well, he did develop late in his life a sort of a jazz bebop church, and he called it the Church of the Living Swing.
All right.
And he would basically hold court and hold service, and he would get up there and do his routines and, you know, speak extemporaneously. In fact, it was busted by the Vice Squad because people were holding reefer and stuff. but it was kind of...
Jazz came walking across the water. This motherfucker was unbelievable, man. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, let me ask you, aside from his influence on you, how do you think he influenced your ilk of DJs?
It was his hipness. It was his style. His timing was impeccable. I mean, this man, when he told a story, I don't think... I mean, usually you can keep people interested for maybe 10, 15 seconds at a time. This man grabbed you by the ears, baby, and you were there with him through the whole goddamn mm-hmm. thing. And as I say, that's that head vibration.
But there seemed to be that thing happening in the 50s where, you know, people like you and, what's his name, Lavada Durst, I think, and there was this...
Lavada Durst?
Is that the guy's name?
I don't know, man. I don't know about him.
He was like a black-talking DJ in the South, and there was a... I guess kind of what's the pick... You know, sort of what's depicted in, you know, in American Graffiti. There was like that whole.
On him?
No, I've just read about him, but I don't know much about him.
That's interesting, man. I want to know about it.
But there was that whole.
I didn't know that.
You guys were sort of the forerunners. You were the first real hep cat, you know, DJs.
Well, I copied his style. I tried to even, you know, get his voice down and everything, man.
And there was, what's his name, Jocko?
Jocko, yeah, Jocko Henderson.
And who's the guy up here in New York? He has that great voice. Roscoe.
Roscoe. Symphony Sid. Roscoe. You remember Symphony Sid?
Yeah, well, I don't remember him, but I have him, you know, I have jazz records where he's, you know, doing his thing.
Yeah.
From Birdland, Royal Roost, that whole thing. And Buckley worked in all those places. That was sort of partly how he developed his thing, was, you know, through hanging out with... He was part of that world, you know, always.
Yeah. Oliver, you made a friend here, man. Glad you're doing this. I'll help you any way I can.
Well, Buckley people tend to gravitate towards one another eventually, you know, because, you know, we have this common love. What do you think about him in terms of being, how should I put this, a musician? I mean, in a way, you listen to his stuff, you hear more music almost than you do.
Well, again, let's get back to head vibration.
Yeah, what do you talk about that?
That is music in itself. Anybody who knows, see, none of us really know how to do it, but to some of us, it's like a natural thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be one of those lucky people like him, and because I understand it, I don't know how to do it, but I do it.
It's not like somebody...
I don't know how to explain it to you. You got to open up all your emotions. You got to be totally real. You got to make mistakes in front of people. Main thing is your timing has got to be impeccable. You know, if mm-hmm. your timing's off, it doesn't make it. But it's almost like that's why it's like music. it's got to flow through the air
mm-hmm.
as you're... My timing's really off today, man. I just come in from Chicago about 2 hours ago, and I am so goddamn tired, I'm about to fall down.
Well, that's sometimes when people are at their best.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you, totally. I love you.
Well, it's not like something, like you're saying, it's not something you can turn on or off, but it's something that happens. Like you said, like a musician, like sometimes you hear a musician solo and it's like they're going through the motions, but the same guy, you can hear him a year later and he's like on a whole other plateau, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
For whatever combination of reasons, like where he is in his place in his life at that time and how he's opening or closing himself.
It's almost like a gift from God. Some people really think they get it straight from the God himself.
Well, when you've been on, what do you feel?
Pardon me?
When you've been most on, what are you feeling yourself?
Oh man, it's a feeling of you feel like a space creature. I maybe that's not the right word, but I feel like I'm floating above the ground. I'm totally high, with no drugs. You understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so high that my head is like a goddamn mushroom, and I am so happy. The happiness syndrome inside of me is like something that just goes, has exploded, and it's gotten all over the bad shit and made the bad shit good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm explaining this right.
Like you're alchemizing, like all of the...
that's a good word, alchemizing, yeah.
All the negativity or something and
exactly.
make it into gold.
I just cleansed my whole body and soul.
And let's say when you're like in one of those raves, like in the middle of the night, and that's when I've listened to you and I kind of felt like you were talking...
Oh, the right time's the right time, man. Especially, I got the most response out of people after midnight because that becomes a very personal time.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody locks into your ass on the radio and you're playing that kind of music that's right and you're saying the right words with the right style, with the right timing, you got them, and you can really perform miracles, man.
Well, again, it's kind of like that trip from American Graffiti, which I think we all experienced, where... You know, I remember being a kid, being under the covers with my transistor, listening to your voice and feeling like you... were talking to me.
Oh, I was talking to you. You know, the art of one-on-oneness is really important, too. And that, again, is a head trip. That's, again, vibrations, head vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to understand that. You know, they try to teach it in broadcasting school and college and whatnot, and so many people just don't catch on to it. They think, like, well, if I talk into this microphone, it's like I'm talking to one person. That is not it at all. You actually lock your mind with that one person out there. But there might be 10 million of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're locked in that grip with that one person. I'm not explaining it right, but...
No, you're explaining it right.
I know what I'm talking about.
You're explaining it right, and I know what you're talking about. Because as a listener, I've experienced that. Not just with you, of course, but, you know, it's one of those sort of psychic phenomena that happen with the radio and the DJ and you know, you as a, you know, or me as a person listening. And, you know, I find that with spoken word people like Buckley, you feel that same way, that he's, like, unlocking doors within your own mind and soul somehow.
You have the gift, too, man, because if you have felt me and you feel Lord Buckley, like what we're talking about, you also have the gift of expression, you know? And thank God you're a fucking writer. you're going to deliver a gift. Every human being that has this gift should get out there and give it to everybody because, man, that's a... the most wonderful thing one human being can do for another.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I've told people over the years when I'm working on this is I feel like I'm a vessel for all of this.
Yeah, you are, man.
You know, that someone had to do it, and it's, you know, it had to...
Why,
you know,
did you want to do this, though? You got to explain that to me.
Well, I guess because it was a combination of things. I mean, like, whenever I hear an artist who experience the art from someone I enjoy, I become interested in who they are. And the more I read about Buckley, the more mysterious and bizarre and curious he became. So curiosity got the better of me.
But he did things for you, though, didn't he?
Yes. Oh, very much.
He turned you on, in other words.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the...
He made you feel good. You felt better about yourself after hearing him.
Right.
Yes, that's what I'm talking
about. And the world became a better place. A better place. I mean, he has a line in the Nas that goes, Nas wanted everybody to see through his eyes so they could see how pretty it was.
The way he described it was the right way.
Right.
You know what I mean? If the preachers would get up there and talk like Buckley, Christ, we wouldn't be killing each other right now.
I feel that he has a very positive, strong message to deliver, and that we're, you know, as a society and culture, in need of something, you know, because
hey,
we're sick.
Gotta send me those records, Oliver, because I'll put them on the air again, and we'll get this thing rolling.
That'd be great.
I'm going to write the book. I'm going to promote the hell out of this goddamn thing.
Well, the book is basically done. I'm adding, you know, I'm adding interviews like yours as I go along. But I got 500 pages of book done.
Oh, I got to read this fucking.
And you know, my agent and I are right now in the process.
I'll do anything you want. I'll write a forward. I'll write a backward. You understand? I'll testify. You got to let me read the book too, man.
Well, writing the forward, that's maybe something we can talk about down the road, because I'm definitely looking for someone someone of note.
Everybody knows I'm one of Buckley's biggest fans, you know, and I actually created my style from Buckley in a sense. You know, I'm a little bit of Lord Buckley, John R., Big Hugh Baby, you know, every one of those great hip jocks, Jocko Henderson.
Well, let me ask you something. When you were a kid growing up in Brooklyn, what was were you speaking hip when you were a teenager? I mean, when did you start?
I was just learning then, man. You know, we were all babes in the woods back in those days. And anybody who had a little bit more knowledge of hipness than somebody else, he was the hippest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying.
So this is like, I mean, you...
Lord Buckley came along and I said, oh, my God.
He was on a whole other level.
Man, he knows everything. This is the man that made everything. That actually is the man who created it. This is God.
You mentioned before you that you did like a kind of a spiritual like record of some kind based sort of on his stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. I never heard that before.
I know, man. And it's out in the storage somewhere. What? I made this like maybe 25 years, no, about 30 years ago.
Wow.
And I printed them up myself. It's when it was syndicated on about 150 stations from California.
Huh.
And I used to I designed a special religious program for Sundays, which ran about a half an hour. And what it was biblical stories told like Lord Buckley. And, you know, it was really good. I got to find those programs again.
And so how did you do it? I'm just curious. Did you take the story and sort of sit down and rewrite it? Or did you just sort of do it?
First of all, I borrowed from Lord Buckley what I could. Second of all, I got a couple of my writers interested. And we started to write up a few of our own stories. You know, in other words, we'd take a typical, like Samson and Delilah or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
and rewrite and recreate it in the hip jargon of like Lord Buckley.
Hmm. What was the name of the record?
I can't remember, man.
Well, I'll remind you, when I send you this stuff, I'll remind you, like, you know, and I'll try to track that down, too,
well,
because...
we're going to be good friends, Oliver.
Good, I hope so.
A real dumb shit, man. I forget my head if it wasn't attached to me. I wish I had these things right now.
What are the pieces of Buckley? You mentioned the Nas. What else have you heard that, you know, that you remember that, you know, affected you?
Oh, Lord, let me think.
The hip Gone, you know that one about Gandhi?
Yeah, I heard that. I've never possessed...
How about any of his Shakespeare's?
Oh, man, you got to send me those tapes. Oh, my God.
I'll send you the tapes, and maybe that'll jog your memory about which ones you really like a lot.
See, I
can't
really
believe you never heard. I'm sorry, go.
30 years ago, when I first started this business. Now, you know, I've been walking around, people have been reminding me of them.
Mm-hmm. It's coming back.
Yes,
I think we're about to have we're going to have some kind of cultural, you know, phenomena, renaissance
and
here.
And you're going to be right there in the forefront, Oliver. I'm going to be right there behind
it
you.
Beats, it'll be working.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing the right thing, man. You have really made me happy today.
Well, good. Let me ask you one more question.
Yeah, baby.
Why do you think Buckley's been neglected? I mean, how come, you know, he was, you know, you and people like that were into him, like, in the late 50s, early 60s, and then there seems to be this, like, three-decade period where, you know, his name just doesn't come up. Why do you think he's been? Why do you think he's been forgotten?
Isn't that strange? You know, that's a very good question, man. I think he was so fucking far ahead of his time. He must have came like from the future or some goddamn thing. No, I'm serious, man. He could have come from the goddamn future. And that's why we're digging on him right now. Because all of a sudden, you know, we're smarter today than we were back in 1960. Matter of fact, we're so fucking smart, we're starting to kill each other there. You know what I mean?
So we've caught up to that place in the future where he was.
Yeah.
He was coming from 1995 back to 1955 to tell us.
From the year 2000.
What we need to know.
Yeah.
And now, you know, and now we've...
It was the language. See, the language he used is really the language we should use to communicate with one another, because it doesn't offend. It makes you feel good when you talk to each other.
Well, that's an interesting...
That's what the black folks started doing.
He talks about that, too. I mean, because he was often labeled like a sick comic, like Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
But he would say, I'm not a sick comic. I'm a healthy comic. I'm about you know, bringing people up, not bringing people down.
Right.
I mean, he defended sick humor. He, you know, he said, this is a sick society, and we need sick humor to show people how sick we are, but I'm not a sick humorist. I think because, you know, he took stories like Jesus and turned them into the Nazis, he was viewed as maybe profane in some way, but you can't really listen
to
that.
I guess, you know, the old timers would maybe think that would be, what's the word for it,
You could see that would be shocking in the 1950s,
yeah.
You know?
Not in this day and age, man.
I think there would still be a lot of... I think Newt Gingrich would have problems with it, but I think the vast majority... You know what I'm saying?
Newt Gingrich is like from the 1950s, you know?
Well, he's coming from the past to tell...
Yeah.
He's the ghost of Joe McCarthy. I mean, there is a definite...
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there is like
a
religious fundamentalist, you know, backlash
right.
occurring that would, I don't think that would be too fond of Buckley. But I think if you listen to him, you know, there's nothing negative there. I mean,
everything. Well, you know, I always call what I do. And by the way, every time you talk to me, you're going to find me cheerful because I am in the happiness business. And, God, they got my supper waiting for me downstairs, man. I'm going to talk to you for a few more minutes.
Okay.
And if you want, I'll talk to you tomorrow and the next day. And
well, I think for the time...
I want you to get this thing done.
I'll put the tapes together for you, and maybe we can talk when you get them and after you listen to them in a few weeks or something.
Okay, now listen. Can I call you Ollie or Oliver? How do I call you?
Oliver.
Oliver, all right. You call me Wolf.
Okay, Wolf.
Now, hold on. I'm going to get Pauline for you and give you the address,
okay,
all right?
We'll talk again soon, okay, ma'am?
Hey, man, you are terrific, baby. Thank
right.
you
well,
so
I thank
much
you.
For calling me.
You are, too.
Hey, baby, I tell you, I've made my day.
Well, you made mine, believe it or not.
Wait, hold on a minute.
Okay.
Baby, what the hell is the button? There it is.